owners of El Pacifico, Bill Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and that makes them mad, and that's just where that's at. And we don't like talk radio around here. We don't like talk radio because we don't think talk radio has anything to do with truth. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, okay? It's a form of entertainment that we've decided to satirize, and we do that because we have we want to mock it. We want to make fun of it. We want to bring it down. We want to insult it. We want to make fun of the lazy people that are the hosts. We want to make fun of the ignorant people that are the hosts on talk radio. Ignorant, stupid people who pretend to have an erudition and an education that they don't have.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we stand for anything, that's what we stand for in this show. It is a satire of talk radio. And the fans of this show understand that. And, you know, look, it really is a satire of everything. One of the things about this radio show that I think has gotten, that makes it, I think, unique and also upsets people in a different way. We are not on this show, we're not about mocking powerful people. That's already been done, and it's done well by some and not so well by others. In fact, it's done well by a very few people and not so well by most everybody else. Making fun of the president, big deal. Making fun of the Congress, big deal. Making fun of the this and the that and the this and that. I think personally I find that boring. Making fun of the foibles and weaknesses and hypocrisies of the average person, now to me, that's fun. I mean, I don't think I'm a sadistic person, but I like to go places where other, you know, maybe other shows have not gone. So we do that the way we do it. And the reason for that is because, A, we don't listen to or enjoy the phony baloney political talk that goes on in American radio. In fact, I think it's been bad for radio, and it'll be a good day when some of these people finally start getting honest and start talking about things they know something about, as opposed to pretending to be conservative or pretending to be liberal. So that'll be a great day in American radio when those radio shows either go away or start getting serious. All right, so we don't like that, and we feel so strongly about it that we have created a radio show that mocks that and other media and the people that take that kind of stuff seriously. So if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. If you do like it, here we are, and you can also join us on our website at philhenryshow.com. Now, at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 a.m. Eastern, we're going to be doing a Q&A on our website at philhenryshow.com. In the news feed, you will see a place where you can enter your questions. And we haven't opened that up yet, but we're going to hear in about, 5 minutes or so, bud.
Yeah, to go to the first break.
In the first break, we will open up a section where you can enter in your questions for us during our Q&A, and that will commence at 1. It'll probably go about a half an hour, and I do promise you that this time out, because the previous ones we've done, I take like forever over one answer, and I don't think that's what you guys want, so I'll try and get to the answers as quickly as I can. On Sunday, the Super Bowl, and it will be Sunday Football with Phil. Join us on our website at philhenryshow.com, Phil TV and HD. We will be watching the game together, having a couple of pops, watching the Patriots and Giants, as we have done at various times during the regular season. Sunday Football with Phil on Sunday. Check your local listings for the start time of the game, because that's when we will we'll hit the web feed. We're not going to do any pregame, man. We will be, boom, hitting the air right at kickoff or thereabouts, and that'll be Sunday. It's all over there at philhenryshow.com. Join us. It's always, you know, a really groovy time. Plus, we got some really cool stuff coming out in the shop, don't we, bud?
Yeah, well, better not say. We've got a pretty good item coming up for summer.
We do. We've got a couple of cool things. So go over to our merchandise store and check out what we have there. All right. This story I thought was pretty interesting. It is about Demi Moore, the actress. And Demi Moore is interesting, I think, because she's going through something that a lot of people go through. I've been through it. You've been through it. She is experiencing the ending of a marriage. It's not fun. It sucks, especially when things end the way they ended for her, and maybe they've ended that way for you. You know, when you find out that your partner has not been faithful, that is a bitch, you know.
That son of a bitch, man.
Yep, it is. And when you find out your partner, who is younger than you, is cheating on you with younger women, and you're a Demi Moore who, you can say what you want about her acting or what you think of her personality, public personality. I've always been struck by how I think she's a decent woman. And I only gather that from the Twitter feed, you know, the way that she and her husband would talk to each other. Seemed like a nice person. And she also, you know, is very active in charitable giving. But even if she wasn't, I mean, who deserves that? Now, she's had a rough few months. You know, she almost, I guess, convulsed herself right into the hereafter with whatever the hell that was that she was smoking. What was that?
Well, it's called whipping, man. I think it's like nitrous oxide.
Nitrous oxide. I still don't understand how you smoke that, but nonetheless. Now the rumor is that she is, she's ready to start dating again. And what have they got her hooked up with? They got her hooked up with this guy, Zac Efron, 24 years of age. And I love this line. Despite her recent health trouble, she's actively pursuing him. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but I'll tell you one thing. If she wanted to get Ashton pissed off or jealous or however she wants to make, that was a good move.
Yeah, because the guy's younger than him.
Yeah, this guy is much younger than Ashton Kutcher. And obviously, Ms. Moore knows what she's doing if she wants to drive Ashton Kutcher clean out of his cooch, man. Now, it's a strange rebound romance, but Moore apparently is hooking up with this High School Musical star to either cure what ails her or piss off Kutcher. And I don't know anything about their marriage other than to say the way that it ended is I can understand how it was rough for her. And, you know, maybe he could have had a little bit more class in the way all of that went down. And if this drives him to suicide, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know.
Think it will?
Well, I'm kidding. I don't want it to drive him to suicide, but, you know, maybe it'll drive him to... Wouldn't that be interesting, though?
Well, you know, it'd be interesting to me, man, if they arrest him on a DUI and he, like, break down crying or something out on PCH.
Yeah, that'd be bitching.
What do you mean?
But if the CHP pull him over and go... Yeah, you're under arrest. We'll do an iron swine about it.
You'll do an iron swine about it?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We'll do an iron swine when I do the break.
All right, then we have an iron swine coming up, and what will this be, bud?
It'll be the CHP pulling over Ashton Kutcher when he drank too much.
And he drank too much because why?
Because he found out about,
he found out about Demi Moore going out with this Efron guy.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so that's Iron Swine coming up here in moments here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and also on our homepage. Don't forget to enter in your question for our Q&A. That will be up. That blog will be up during that break as well. So the very best of luck to you, Ms. Moore. And if you want to know our further comment on that, listen to Iron Swine here just moments away. This is our News and Information Hour. The jobless rate has fallen to 8.3%. They say that alters the face of the campaign. We will see. And more news to get to here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, including something that just... I said it today on Twitter. I've never been so close to joining a lynch mob as I was today when I found out that the police have arrested a second teacher in that Miramonte Elementary School caper, that disgusting scandal that we'll tell you about if you haven't heard it. You better get ready to have your stomach pumped. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And now time for another edition of Iron Swine. Iron Swine is on a... He's going to go on the highway.
Yeah, this Iron Swine, I'm going to go out on the highway and look for a drunk driver.
Iron Swine is doing drunk driver. He's doing drunk driver duty. Ring, ring, ring.
Yeah, this is Iron Swine.
Yeah, man, there's somebody out here on the road. He's drunk.
He's drunk, huh?
Yeah.
Here comes Iron Swine. And then a siren goes on.
Yeah, there is Iron Swine up there.
Hey, pull over. I'm Iron Swine.
Yeah?
What's your name?
Oh, man, my name is Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher, are you the guy that was married to that lady?
Yeah, I was married to Demi Moore.
Yeah, that's the lady, right?
Yeah, she's like a movie actress.
Yeah, that's right. What a douchebag. You cheated on her and everything.
Yeah, I feel bad, man. I feel real bad.
How come you were driving like a douche?
On account of this.
Aha, peach schnapps. Look at that, Jägermeister. You're under arrest.
This been Iron Swine, and he arrested Ashton Kutcher drinking...
It was peach schnapps.
You're drinking peach schnapps and going fast.
Because he felt bad about messing over that lady, Demi Moore.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, why do you always have to ask, is that it?
Because I never know if you guys are done.
Very good.
Yeah, well, that's Iron Swine.
All right, so that Iron Swine, that episode of Iron Swine, ladies and gentlemen. They arrest Ashton Kutcher for drunk driving. Peach schnapps, huh?
Yeah, he had a cooler in the front seat. Yeah, he had chilled peach schnapps.
Yeah, he's chasing it with a beer.
Ooh!
What?
Ooh! He's chasing peach schnapps with a beer? Good God.
Yeah, man, I mean, the guy's hardcore.
Well, that ain't... I wouldn't call that hardcore.
Are you kidding me? Peach schnapps will mess you up two times.
Oh, get out of here with your peach schnapps. God, talk about wretch.
Yeah, have some peach schnapps, and here's a Coors Light. Blah! All right, anyway, very good, guys. Thank you for that. Well, see, that's Iron Swine will show you. Iron Swine, in my opinion, shows you the future or the possibilities, right?
Yeah, it shows you what could happen if you continue to go down the highway of doucheness.
What?
It shows you what happens when you go down the highway of doucheness. All right. The jobless rate has fallen to 8.3%, altering the face of the campaign. So says the New York Times. By the way, I had a thought today, not for nothing, but if the NBA insists on keeping basketball teams in markets like Charlotte, Charlotte's a great city, great football city. It's a great basketball state, North Carolina. But for whatever reason, the NBA's had a hard time making a go of it in the city of Charlotte. They have the Bobcats. I was thinking if we replace that O in Bobcat with a U, you got the Bubcats, and that's not too far of a leap to Bubba Cats. What do you think, Bud Dickman?
Sucks.
All right.
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, fine. Jobless rate falls to 8.3%. The burst of job growth in January gives President Obama a fresh but tricky opportunity to revise the grim economic narrative of his presidency while offering Mitt Romney a choice: embrace a new optimism or campaign against a sinking economy even as it shows signs of turning around. Now, this is the New York Times writing this, so please keep it in mind. And when I say keep it in mind, in the very first paragraph, they sort of tip their hand. They've given Mitt Romney a choice that is not his only choice. Maybe that's what the New York Times thinks. I'm sure. Embrace a new optimism. That means that he's going to have to say, boy, things are really great. President Obama's doing a good job, huh? Ain't going to happen. Romney's got plenty of room to move. Don't worry about it, New York Times. It's not campaign against a sinking economy even as it shows signs of turning around. No. What he would be saying is the turnaround is not enough. The turnaround is anemic. The turnaround is a Democrat turnaround. It ain't a Republican turnaround. It's not a business turnaround. It's not a long, you know, lots of stuff he can do. The Labor Department reported on Friday that the unemployment rate had fallen all the way back to the level of President Obama's first full month in office, 8.3%, from a high of 10% in late 2009. Yet, unemployment also remains higher than it has been for any presidential election since the Great Depression.
those dueling realities and improving economic economy that remains very weak creates serious risks for the top political advisors to President Obama and Mr. Romney as they begin to grapple with the impact of Friday's report. I can't remember the unemployment ever being that high in my lifetime, so they're right. I was wondering...
What was it back when you were talking about Carter and the misery index?
The misery index of Carter was, if I'm not mistaken, inflation, unemployment, and the consumer price. Am I right about that? Maybe. Maybe it was just inflation and unemployment. I think that was the misery index that Jimmy Carter talked about when he was running against Gerald Ford in 76. And, of course, it was unfortunate for Jimmy Carter that he ever even thought up the misery index, because by 1980, Ronald Reagan was using it against him because it was worse in 1980 than it had been in 1976. The Republican Party has been treating the Obama presidency as if it's Jimmy Carter Part 2. And there were a lot of people, including me, that thought if Obama doesn't do a good job, that's exactly what it's going to be. But, you know, if Obama shows that the numbers in November of 2012 are better than they were when he became president, that ain't Jimmy Carter. And, I failed to say this yesterday, and I really wanted to, but that doesn't mean anything. I know you guys won't believe me, but there are people now who believe with that kind of an improvement, Obama will be reelected. I've been feeling that, and I'll tell you why. Let me just say this. If Obama is doing such a glaringly lousy job, you would think that the Republican Party would know exactly what it wanted to do to cure the problem. But the Republicans here in this primary season have been going at this thing scattershot. You got Ron Paul over here. You got Newt Gingrich, who hates Mitt Romney's guts. You got Santorum, who doesn't like Romney all that much either. You got the same dynamic this year that you had back in 2008. You got a Republican Party that's at war with itself between the conservatives and the moderates. And the conservatives insist that they are the heart and soul of the conservative party, and or the Republican Party, and therefore they're the ones that need to be the voice, the face of the party to go up against Obama. And what conservatives don't understand, right or wrong, good or bad, and let's say you're the greatest people in the world and you have the answers. Let's say you have the answers. You ain't going to get elected president. Conservative is not going to win against Obama. It won't happen. Why do you think Obama got elected in the first place? Because everybody's in love with liberals? No. Obama got elected in the first place because he was the more moderate of the two. You think that McCain was a moderate, a lot of Republicans would call McCain a very moderate voice. No. In the view of the American people in general, McCain was too far right. Obama was right down the middle. Now, that's the truth. Forget about whether you Republican versus Democrat. We always hear about independents, you know.
You talk about independents, they thought Obama was like middle of the road?
Yes, yes, yes. He was the guy that made sense. Obama was the guy that seemed to be cool, calm, and collected, a guy who was sober, a guy that was, you know, playing it right down the middle, playing it nice and cool, a guy that had the answers. He wasn't some, you know, a scattershot, nervous wreck like a lot of these Republicans come off as. I'm telling you. That's why. And so along comes this new election season, and there are the Republicans again, man, doing battle with each other, not figuring, they don't know who they are, what they are. You got Gingrich and these guys, and they finally figured it out, though, you know. And
well, yeah, they don't want to be conservative.
No, exactly. The Republicans have finally figured this out. They have finally said, these guys are bad news. Gingrich is bad news. Santorum ain't going to get elected dog catcher. We got to present to the American people that good old-fashioned Main Street cloth coat Republicanism that was in his better days, Richard Nixon's thing before Watergate happened and the whole thing fell through. But and Ford and guys like that. We don't want these arch conservatives, you know.
Well, I still think he's going to get his butt kicked by Obama on account of he's Mormon.
Yeah, but Obama, he might be Muslim.
Yeah, that's right. Obama's Muslim and Romney's Mormon, and so that's the big thing. You guys are just as dumb today as you were when he got elected. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're welcome, bud.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll be right back here in our News and Information Hour. Don't go away. PhilHendryShow.com for our Q&A tonight.
Phil Hendry.
Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. By the way, I just posted, we just posted the question here section on the news feed on our website, philhendryshow.com, so you'll see it. It simply says for the question and answer for Phil, put your questions here, and there's a picture of me with a space helmet on.
Why?
I don't know why. Just that's the picture of me that's there.
Yeah, that don't make any sense, though.
It doesn't have to make sense. It was an available picture of me. I'm wearing a space helmet. What, are you going to make an issue out of that now?
Yeah, but it didn't make any sense that people are going to go, what's it about, you know?
Yeah, it's like it disorients them.
Oh, get out of here, disorients them.
They're all in a heap. They're confused.
Yeah, that's it. Is this where I ask Phil questions? Oh, wait a second. That's a picture of Phil in a space helmet. Oh, I'm all confused.
Well, I mean, you're laughing about it, man, but a lot of people have said, just a picture of Phil. That way we know it's him, and that's... You know,
yeah, it's like it's a good signpost of what to do.
I think you guys are full of crap.
What?
I don't think you get any questions like that at all. Give us a picture of Phil looking normal. It's a signpost for what to do. I don't buy it, not for 1 cent, not for 1 brass farthing. All right, a couple of things. Number one, don't really like to use the radio show to make personal announcements, but to my godson, Joe... Look, dude, I know you're disappointed in the performance of the Lakers this year. I am, too. You know, I'm not a Clipper fan. I never will be. I appreciate that they're a basketball team that play in L.A., and I'm sorry they got Chris Paul. But you can't obsess over it over and over and over again, morning, noon, and night, on your Twitter feed. Everything with this guy, man.
What's he talking about now?
Oh, you know, the ref blew this call and that and this, that, this, that. You know... And the Clippers did this, the Clippers did that. Look, let's just be honest about something, okay? The NBA, as a business enterprise, as a business proposition, has decided that they want to go in a certain direction. And what is that direction? They want to embrace not only large markets, but they want to make the small and the medium markets go as well. They've had great success in towns like Orlando. They've had great success in towns like Salt Lake City, Phoenix, San Antonio. These are not major markets, but they're great basketball cities. Now, for whatever reason, stadiums this, I don't know, demographic, you know, Charlotte, New Orleans, you know, ain't making it, it ain't happening, baby. And some of these other markets, they're just not making a go of it. Times are tough. I don't know. Maybe it's a, you know, there was a time way, way back in the early days of organized professional sports when they used to contract leagues. They did it all the time. All the time. Every year, maybe every 3 years, 2-3 teams gone. You know, they were out to like this many teams. You know, can't support it. You know, they're not keeping up. Goodbye. You're gone. You know, they would contract the size of the league. Not the NBA or the NHL, man. They don't want to do that. Not Major League Baseball. No way. Not anymore, man. These guys, they cannot fathom that. So what they want to do instead is they'll do anything to make these teams profitable, to make these teams successful, to ensure that these smaller market teams are at least they've got a fighting chance, even if it means the big teams take it in the shorts, like the Lakers and the Chris Paul deal. You know?
You're going to complain about that?
Yes, I'm going to complain about that. That was a deal that the Lakers had. That's why the Lakers are a great team, man. That's why they are one of the golden franchises of the NBA, one of the greatest along with the Celtics and a few others, because they know what they're doing. Now the NBA steps in and says, well, Oh, I see. You don't want us to have a good team in Los Angeles because you think the chump change out here will just go and watch any kind of basketball. Is that what you think? Because I got news for you, man. No, we won't. You know, this whole thing about having team loyalty, there's a reason why I'm loyal to the L.A. Lakers. You want to know why? Why do you think that is?
Oh, because they're in L.A.?
No, wrong. Got nothing to do with it. Why do you think it is?
Well, I mean...
because they win!
Yeah, but that's not being loyal to a team.
That's exactly being loyal to a team. When they win, I love them. When they don't, they suck. I don't want to have anything to do with them. This stuff about Fairweather fan, let me tell you something, man. I don't know about anybody out there, and maybe this is heresy, but when a team ain't winning, I don't owe them a nickel of my money. I'm not going to go watch them play. I don't owe them anything. And if you think I'm going to throw my hard-earned money away in some garbage can ball club that can't dragging their asses up and down the court every night and can't play basketball, I ain't going to go and see it. Period. There's enough people in Los Angeles that will to keep a ball club here. There ain't enough of those people in places like Charlotte and New Orleans. People stay away from lousy products, whether it's bad food, whether it is a bad suit of clothes, you know, whether it's a lousy car, and bad sports teams. Money is too, especially these days, is too precious, too valuable. And this jazz about, oh, Fairweather fans, you know, through the, you know, I got news for you, man. I mean, that's when I was like a little kid, that's what I did. Not now, not as an adult. I'm not going to waste my time. My ball clubs, I got to watch them when they're winning. When they stink, you ain't going to get me in this seat. What the hell do you think this is?
Yeah, but you have season tickets to the Rams.
I had season tickets to the Rams. I'll keep the season tickets. You know, I'll keep the season tickets.
Well, that seat all right there, what does that mean?
It means I'll keep the season tickets and I'll sell the seats to some poor guy that wants to go see that garbage. I'll keep them because I ain't going to give them up in case the team turns it around. What the hell, do you think I'm stupid? But you think I'm going to go watch that stuff? I ain't going to watch it, and I'm going to get my money back. I'll go out and scalp that stuff, man. I'll go out, I'll scalp it, I'll make a profit, and when the team starts to turn it around, then I'll go and watch them. But if you think for 5 seconds I'm going to go out and sit there with this whole Fairweather fan and aren't you a loyal fan and, boy, you're only here when they win, you better believe it, man. And if you think I'm ashamed of that, think again.
Man, I don't know. You know, a lot of people, they go out there when the team loses and they show that they love them, you know. And
yeah, what about you just talking about Canada on account of that one on a documentary?
What?
When in Canada was getting their butts beat.
Wait a minute, man. That's a different story. That's a different thing entirely. You talking about the Canada series?
When they played to Russia.
Yeah. That was the series they were playing against Russia, the summit series, okay? It was a best of eight. And they were getting their ass handed to them through the first four games, so?
Yeah, well, are you going to give up then?
That's different, bud. That's not a whole season. That's not two or three seasons in a row. That's different. That's a championship series, if you will. It was an exhibition, but it was definitely a major series for the Canadian and Russian players. And it was very, very big for the fans on both sides. I mean, that was huge. That was Canadian hockey, which was considered to be the greatest in the world. And all of a sudden, here come these Russians thinking that they're going to take them on. And the Canadians went into that series thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, baby. You know, make sure my car is, the engine's warmed up and my car is parked at the locker room door because I'm going to want to, you know, get out of here fast and go get a steak. Yes, sir, you got it. Okay, this won't take long. And the Canadians hit the ice thinking they were going to brush these guys aside. Well, guess what?
Yeah, so you're going to give up on them?
No, man, because, bud, that's not the same thing.
Not the same thing, not like on a season.
See, here's the thing. If you're talking about a season-long, stinking, rotten team, or two seasons, three seasons, or a team that, like, you know, some of these clubs, man, I mean, look at some of this crap that people put up with. Year in and year out, they stink, and people go to see that stuff. That's what I'm talking about. But if you're talking about like a championship series like that, and you know, Bud's talking about, because he saw it with me. Phil Esposito was on the film, and he said, "We're really disappointed in the fans. We can't believe, because the Canadians turned on them. The Canadian fans turned on the Canadian team and said, 'You guys suck. You're obviously not as good as we thought. You're a disgrace. You're a disgrace to the national game.' I mean, you know, this was a bad thing." The Canadian team was carrying on their shoulders the reputation of the country that invented hockey, the country that was the home, the matrix of hockey. And the Canadians were down 2-1 with one tie. So that's how many games? That's 4. All right. You got to win 5, and in this case, they'd have to win 4. And they'd have to, they still have to win 4. They'd still have to win 5 with one tie. So, you know, the Canadian fans were turning on them. And Esposito gave that TV interview just before they went to Russia. They played the first 4 games in Canada. They played them in Montreal. I think they played in Toronto. They played in Winnipeg. And then they played in Vancouver. And then they went to Russia and they played all 4 of those games in Moscow. And the Canadians, before they left Canada, got on TV like Esposito. And he said, God, you know, we're breaking our asses here. We're breaking our asses here. You know, these guys are good. You know, the Russians brought over with them the Russian style of hockey. The Canadians didn't know from these fast skating, these transitions, you know, in basketball, they call it a fast break, this kind of transition hockey the Russians were playing fast as hell. Their conditioning was unbelievable. The freaking Canadians were like a bunch of old men out there, you know. And here are the Russians handling the puck like they'd never seen teams handle a puck like this, passing the way they did, the skating. The conditioning was emphasized in Russian hockey. The conditioning, being able to get up and down the ice. Canadians, they were blown away.
What'd they do?
Well, what they did was, when they realized they had a fight on their hands, they went back to North American hockey. And basically what they did to slow down this fast Russian game was they kept the puck on the boards. So they did not let the puck get out into open ice. They kept battling for it along the boards. And they started beating up on the Russians. I mean, they knocked some teeth out. And the Russians had not played that kind of a game. Okay?
But, yeah, but they said they were going to get off the ice.
Well, the Russians didn't know how to respond to that. At one point, they tried to pull the team off the ice. And the referee said, there's really nothing that they're doing that's illegal. They're checking your guys pretty hard. And I mean, you know, the Canadians did. I mean, they were checking these guys on the boards, body checks. I mean, slamming these guys, leaving guys laid out on the ice. So what happened was this. The Russians learned the North American game, which is a muscle game. And the Canadians learned the Russian game, which was a fast, emphasized passing and puck handling and skating. It was a brand new thing. And those two types of hockey were incorporated by each side. Today, you've got Russian players here in the NHL playing North American hockey, and those guys mix it up with the best of them. You got Russian players over here, they will throw down with anybody. I mean, they've learned over the course of 30-plus years that that's what you do over here. And you have teams now that are phenomenal skating teams and puck-handling teams. That's what came of that Summit Series. It was...
Yep, who wound up winning?
Well, the Canadians wound up winning. The Canadians wound up winning. But I got to tell you, the Canadians wound up winning by one of the dirtiest things you've ever seen.
Well, about that guy broke that guy's ankle.
Yeah, when Bobby Clark, the famous guy with no teeth from the Flyers, he slashed the number one skater on the Russian side. I forget the guy's name. He basically slashed this guy's ankle and broke his ankle with his stick. And it's all on tape. And Bobby Clark hasn't denied it. And the Russians know it happened. And the Canadians know they did it. And by knocking that guy out, they took a big piece of the Russian firepower with them. And the Canadians wound up winning the series. But Bobby Clark knew exactly what he was doing. That guy was on a break out ahead of him. He was all alone with the goalie. And there's Clark. He's the only guy left. And he took that stick. And I mean, wham.
Busted his ankle.
He busted his ankle with that stick. So that's North American, that's Canadian hockey. And they beat them using that muscle game, but they also learned a valuable lesson, man. They had to adjust, really. And what they did to adjust to that speed game is they just took the puck away from the Russians and kept it on the board, made them fight for the puck, made them go around behind the net and fight for it there, made them fight for it between the blue lines. And I don't know anything about hockey, but that much I understand, you know.
Yeah, and you said they stole her beer.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The Canadians got to Moscow, and the first thing they noticed, they had brought over 400 cases of beer. 400 cases of beer. And it was almost all gone. The freaking Russians stole their beer. So that already had them in a bad mood. So they're going for their beer, and I think they stole like half of it. They had 400 cases of beer, and the Russians stole like 200 cases, and that really hacked them off. So they weren't in any mood when they finally went to those games. So there's the story, and I didn't even mean to go into that story. It's a very interesting story. If you want to see the documentary, it's on the NBC Sports Channel. It's outstanding. It's outstanding. All right, we'll be right back. Final segment here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget, tonight we're on live on our video cast at 7 o'clock, broadcasting locally for Los Angeles, but all over the Internet on Phil TV and HD. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So we have our Q&A coming up in a few minutes on Phil TV in HD. We will see you guys tonight, of those of you who are BSPs watching us on Phil TV in HD for our Los Angeles show. And, of course, we are national Monday through Friday. Now, we were just doing the numbers there, bud. Were you doing that?
No, but I mean, we get...
I don't think it's possible. All right, well, what we were doing here is we were saying the Canadians took 400 cases of beer with them over to the Summit Series in 1970, whenever it was, 1974. And you guys don't think you can drink...
No, I mean, how many guys are on a Canadian... was the Canadians, did they have?
Well, it's a hockey team, man. I don't know how many, but how many guys are on a hockey team? Are there 20, 25, 30? You know? And... then they brought their wives, which I ain't saying the wives drink beer, but they did. They were allowed to bring their wives, and they brought along with them, obviously, coaches. The coaches have wives, trainers. The trainers have wives. And then there's staff, which is God knows who, you know, whoever organized this thing. So I don't think 400 cases of beer over a two-week stretch is that much of a – you guys are making a big thing out of that, you know.
Are you kidding me, man? I mean, how many – 4 six-packs in a case of beer –
look, at one case of beer, you and I could drink in one night, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so that's just two guys. Now you take 400 cases of beer, split it up between, let's say, 80 people. Nah, man, I don't think that's a problem at all. Not a problem at all. But in any event, they didn't get their 400 cases of beer because the Russians stole 200 cases of it, which is like, God, you talk about. You know, in some societies, folks, I was talking to the guys about this. Pilfering is an acknowledged fact of life in some society. In our society, if you steal, you steal. It doesn't matter if it's a penny. It doesn't matter if it's 2 cents, if it's 5 cents. Wait a second, that was in my car. Wait, you know these valets? Did you ever see that thing that we were watching, Bud?
Yeah, they're sticking their hand there and taking the money.
Yeah, some of these guys that park cars for a living, they think nothing of going through your glove box, going through the center console and taking money or taking whatever they can. Now... believe it or not, in some societies, that's considered an acceptable... it's called pilfering. Now, what it means is oh, well, you know. I mean, that's how people survive. If you live, if you visit Jamaica, you live in Jamaica, talk to a cop in Jamaica about some guy just took, say, oh, I don't know, a wristwatch out of your hotel room. You didn't have it in the safe, sir? No, I did not. Well, it's, you know. Well, what do you mean? In Jamaica... and maybe a wristwatch is a little heavy, I don't know. Pilfering is an accepted fact of life. If you see it laying there and nobody's got any dibs on it, hey, you know, I'll grab that. Thank you. It's mine. China, that's another country where pilfering's allowed, you know. Now, I don't know about Russia, and that's a hell of a lot more than pilfering.
Yeah, you're talking about pilfering, man. They take 200 cases of beer? Man, I call that out-and-out theft. That is absolute and unequivocal.
All right, take it easy. Take it easy, man.
God, man.
I'm not kidding you.
I'd have a heart attack. Yeah, they took their 400 cases, they took their 200 cases of beer. Now, the Russians, the Canadians said later, and you know, here's the thing about the Canadian hockey team. These guys are a bunch of rural, most of these guys are rural Canadians. They are good old boys. They are conservative. They saw themselves as the, you know, the banner carriers of freedom and capitalism. They really did. And they, in other words, they looked at the Russians the way a lot of most Americans would at that time. So... they're over there in Russia in 1973, and it was not an easy situation for them. They're living over there for 2 weeks. They're being followed by cops. They every time they turn around, they see people following them. They know their bloody rooms are being bugged and tapped and everything else. So this is the kind of pressure they were under. And on top of everything else, now they're there in this arena playing hockey against the Russian team, and they're playing this Canadian hockey, man. They're knocking guys' teeth out with their sticks. They're sticking a skate in a guy's face. They're, you know, doing everything they can. And meanwhile, there's guys up there with the big hats from the KGB ready to torture them at the drop of a hat.
That's probably took the beer.
That's what I'm thinking. The KGB got half the beer, and the price was, we will keep you out of the gulag, huh? What do you think?
What are they, from Italy? Man, does that sound like a...
All right, anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. And don't forget to join us for our Q&A coming up next here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. That is our Q&A, question and answer. And then tonight, of course, for our local Los Angeles show. And visit us online at philhendryshow.com for our archives and, of course, our live streaming video. We'll see you guys tonight for the video cast, or if you want to hang out for our Q&A coming up next here on Phil TV and HD and the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.